Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, here for today's episode of Startup Hustle. I'm bringing you guys an awesome guest. We're going to be talking about how to increase your external traffic. I was in a podcast webinar. It was kind of a panel podcast, honestly, and I met Matt. And he was talking about what he does, and I'm going to explain that to you guys here shortly, but he was explaining about what he does. And I was like, oh my God, I need a full hour with this guy. I think what he's doing is amazing. And I wanted to bring it to you guys. So without further ado, Matt Parker, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Cheers, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to this discussion. I'm sure you've got some great questions for me.
We're going to have some fun. Where are you coming from?
So I'm from Greater Manchester in the UK. I have been around the world. I've done a few things. I'm sure you're going to dig into that when you just said that to me earlier. You're going to get a bit of a bio about me. But I'm just kind of like a northern guy from just outside of Manchester.
Are you a redhead like me? I can't tell a little bit.
I'm not, but my brother and dad are. So I've got a red beard. But I've not red hair.
Okay, so he's got a hat on. I've got a red beard. I got a hat on. I'm 99.7% European per 23 in me, the 23 in me DNA test. So I'm American mutt as it gets. But I knew me and Matt were going to hit it off just like, you know, his idea is brilliant, working around this Pinterest space. Before we jump into the details of Matt's story, shout out to our sponsor for today's episode has made all of this possible. Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. If you're looking to scale your software team, Fullscale.io is a great place to start. All right, Matt, I'd like to start with a little bit with like the hero story before we just jump into like business and what we do. And, you know, I think it all starts with a story. Stories are everything. Did you always know you're going to be in the e-commerce space? Did you always know you're going to be an entrepreneur as far back as you want to go? Kind of like where'd you get started?
Okay, I'll go into more detail than I've ever been, actually, because you've actually triggered something in my head. So I've gone way back to when I was a degree student. So I basically started off at degree level after doing sort of graphic design communication. I went into programming, did multimedia and UI interface design.
Okay.
And obviously that included the old school Macromedia, which is now obviously that got acquired by Adobe. And I've seen the rise of Adobe from Photoshop 1. So maybe I am older than I probably...
No.
Self-worth.
I'm 35. Are you older or younger than me?
Oh, I'm older. I'm 39.
Okay. Okay.
Going on 40, so.
He said that like he was a lot older, but barely.
It's just when you see these things popping up now, you know, you've got different versions. You kind of go, oh, I remember the first one, and it kind of takes you back. So, I did all that kind of stuff. And what's interesting is that I did my degree around about the 1999, 2000 mark. And at that point. What the reason I'm explaining this now is because I think it'll come full circle with what we're going to. And so the stuff we were doing interactively in JavaScript was very relatable to things like the metaverse that's coming up. And it was kind of like, you know, looking into the dynamics of creating a flash-based interactive website where people could shop. You click on a shop, you buy a product. And it's kind of, the sad part is we've been through this whole process and I've followed this throughout my life in that I've ended up in e-commerce because what happened overnight is that the blogs came out. You had Bootstrap coding, you had Twitter, you had all these things popped up and suddenly interactive sites became a thing at the back of the room. And, you know, the motion imagery didn't yet, I mean, man, I'm going off 56K modems where you could hear it in the background.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
So we didn't have the bandwidth. We didn't have the technology.
Too early.
And we're working in Dreamweaver, working in ones and zeros, grid systems, all that kind of technical stuff. And from there, I had an exhibition at London Tower, and then I got some placements as an intern, working alongside some decent companies. I was working with BBC Television.
No big deal.
You know, and we did. I did some DVD interactive UI interface designs for Universal Studios for the music department and different things. So that was cool. That was kind of DVDs. You know, you hear that name now, and it's kind of like that's gone as quick as it came in. And that's what I'm saying. Things move so quickly. So, moving forwards, I went for my degree, did my exhibition, did a few placements. And then I actually became ill with Lyme disease. I had Lyme disease. Nobody knows this. I've never really spoke about this. And it kind of knocked me on my ass, sorry to say, you know.
Yeah.
It knocked me back. And at that point, I'd actually been over to Los Angeles. I'd written some scripts. I got on the Tarantino School of Excellence. I came back home. I was a bit of a nomad, but I knew I wanted to be in the multimedia industry somehow. But I was so ill, I had to reevaluate my life, reevaluate things. I was actually working at the time that I became ill for a big company who was working on contracts like Prudential and Bulbis Lendlease. So they're kind of the companies that own Petronas Towers in Kuala Lumpur. So I had to come out. I was working on things that I enjoyed, but I had to come out because I was too ill. So it was actually a blessing in disguise, because it made me reevaluate things. And I kind of started looking at the e-commerce side of things. So I was like, you know, I can see things developing with imagery and, you know, just small scale, non-blog kind of movement with multimedia. So I started off on eBay, of all places, because there wasn't any Amazon, literally no Amazon.
Yeah.
And I kicked off a business that became five or six figures a couple of years. And then I created another eBay store. And then Amazon came along with Buy on Demand. And obviously, I had to have a go at that because me being me, I can't help myself. I thought
eBay, buy it now. Is that what you mean? Is that what you said? I'm sorry. What came out?
So, on demand. So obviously with eBay at the time, it was more an auction-based algorithm. So you've got the timestamp algorithm, but with Amazon, what they were trying to obviously coin, which they have, is the sort of buy on demand audience, you know, buy it, get it tomorrow. They weren't into that Amazon. They were mostly auction and just about 30-day buy it now kind of thing. So they obviously Amazon saw a gap in that market. And I moved with the times with that.
So pausing there for a second, same thing. Like I'm an Amazon, you know, I built an Amazon agency. It started with eBay. Basically I feel like I had maximized out what I could learn on eBay regards to, not that I couldn't build the business or whatever, but I'm truly passionate about e-commerce. Like I actually care about the science of these marketplaces, and it's problem solving for me, and I like it. I enjoy it. I want to be the best. I want to figure out why it's working like this. Like that comes natural to me. I'm not just a businessman, you know? So there's a difference. There's a lot of great agency owners and different things that, you know how to build teams and know how to brand and know how to, you know, all those types of things. For me, it very much started with just a passion for e-commerce. I was like, it's pulling in kind of creativity. And on eBay, I was able to make these bundles, and I was using like Photoshop, kind of like give myself some borders and include this item and this item and this item in a photo. And I've got a bundle, and that's what's the difference between me and the competitors, and the item specific things I could change, and the SEO, right, of the titles and descriptions. And then Amazon came along, which was the complete opposite of that. You couldn't customize the descriptions. You couldn't change anything around. You had to have white background photos. You had to have like all these kind of like, it wasn't about taking photos of your dad's stuff in the garage. It was instead like more legitimate. It felt more legitimate in regards to who they wanted on the platform. So I made the same transition. I loved Amazon because it seemed like there was endless possibilities in regards to the things you could do proactively to grow them. And I liked that. I liked that part versus eBay. It was like, there's a point where you've got it set up and now you just like, let it go. You let it do its thing.
Yeah, I agree. It became stagnant. They had the opportunity to move in a different direction, but I think that's what happens with these things. This is why I'm always keeping an ear to the ground. That's why I'm doing Pinterest now, because I think that there's such dynamic shifts that happen that, you know, I think people need to be careful. They don't cubbyhole themselves into one ideology because, you know, that is the end of your business. Because I've done that and I stepped back and I started failing because I was like, oh, okay, I've got it all sorted. I've sussed everything out. No, it's e-commerce. And look how fast it's moved with a catalyst known as a pandemic. It's kind of blown everything forwards out of proportion. And everyone was trying to scramble to keep up or not keep up because it was a terrible time for a lot of people, but also a good time. So
it's literally a blessing and a curse. I'm living it because, you know, business is growing. More brands than ever are running the e-commerce. You know, more people are buying online than ever before. Yeah. At the same time, for the brands that are the people I work with day in and day out, it's the hardest it's ever been for us. You know, supply chain, inflation, competition, comparing the last, you know, comparing to a pandemic year when numbers were off the charts, you know. So you go like this in 2021, are you still growing or is there a decline? Because, you know, now people can go back to stores. One of the hardest years, you know, I've been in the business for sure.
Definitely. And a weird one as well, because it wasn't scalably traction. You know, you couldn't actually quantify the scalability because it was so erratic. It's funny really, because I started obviously on eBay, but eventually I became part of the eBay development global testing team. Okay. So last year I was testing the new personalized feature because we built, people think I'm nuts when I say this, but we built an automated system based on different plugins that we built in the WooCom world. And basically it runs 400,000 ASINs because we do personalized and it does it on autonomy. Okay. So when I say that to some people, their heads roll off and go, what does that even mean? But the reason why I went to Pinterest with this is because we're able to test this with pins and do something different. And we've got this system in the background. Why I've never gone elsewhere and sold that off is because I just like learning. I know some people don't get that. It's like, why don't you sell it? I have been approached to sell it off. And I'm like, well, where's the fun in that? You know, I'm only here once and I'm getting older. Why not?
I like that. A bit,
you know?
It sounds like something someone from the UK would say for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it might come to a day where I can't afford to put food on the table and I'm like, oh, well, I don't have a choice. But at the moment, I've got a supporting wife and family and, you know, I think it's good and great that I'm able to do this right now. So, sorry, I deviated as well away from
that. No. This is good. And, you know, I'm just relating like that path. I think that anyone that's a problem solver, that's an investigator or whatever the case might be, a trailblazer, you know, you start with something, you learn it, you know, maybe not become an expert, but you learn it. And it kind of creates the next thing, you know, and the next thing. And I think that anytime you get into, you're now on a platform that what you maybe found or discovered is now changed quite a bit. And sometimes you change with it. And other times you're like, okay, I'm going to go find, you know, what else is new and how I can pull that in. So like, I do a lot of things on Amazon, but it's really, a lot of things I learned before that in e-commerce that I then brought to Amazon, you know?
Definitely. Absolutely. Definitely. I mean, I've got a couple of sayings. I mean, I've got internal staff and I've got with the brands because we've got 2 7-figure brands. And that was part of the case study that we've used for our Pinterest because it was always great to have something internally that you could test because you're able to throw something at a wall and see if it's stuck, but without the expense and risk of a client, you know? So that's why we did it. And I thought it's a perfect opportunity because our brand suited the demographics of Pinterest. Because obviously it depends. It's a very female orientated 80% marketplace and there's certain things that don't sell.
I use Pinterest, by the way. I'm part of the 20%, I guess. So
well, yeah, but that's changing. That's changing because, and the reason I know that's changing, I can see the changes, especially with Gen Zs and millennials. There's a big change there. But yeah, again, I'm going off point. This is what I do. My brain's so full of all these things. You've gone from
I'm going to bring you back, but it's because I like it. I'm actually sticking with you, so I wouldn't even know that you're off. I'm like, because I think I'm right there with you. I'm like, yeah, me too. And if you need some brands to play with, some seven-figure brands to play with, you let me know, okay? So
sure, yeah.
That's just a sidebar. But, you know, we have some products or some brands that do very well there.
Brilliant.
And we have some that have been with me a very long time and are the brands that I get to test with and play with. And, you know, they've also been on the benefiting side of all of our innovation, you know, so getting opportunities on stuff first. I love those brands. I know. So if you have two, I've got a couple, probably two or three, two that are always down to test stuff. So you just let me know.
Cool. Yeah.
So bring it back to Pinterest. You said you started on eBay. You had a couple stores going. Let's pick up the story there. So you had like a couple stores going on eBay. You're selling products there, doing e-commerce. Yeah. What came after eBay?
So at the moment, I'll start from this point and work backwards. So at the moment, we have still got, I've got an associative colleague, a director, Sigourney. She's running the brands, but we've actually got six stores in total.
Okay.
eBay, Amazon, and Google WooCommerce. We didn't do Shopify just because I'm a firm believer in Shopify, especially Pinterest. It just didn't give us that freedom as coders, if you know what I mean. It doesn't give you the freedom to be able to be a bit more innovative if you've got that coding background. So that's why we stuck with WooCom. Going back to what you just said then, I went on from eBay then to Amazon. I've moved properties 3-4 times. Okay. Started off in a garage, even though I don't come from a really bad background, sort of a middle class affluent background. I wanted to start off on my own two feet, and I bought a heat press because I'm actually qualified in screen printing.
Okay.
So a lot of people don't know this side of me, and I've never really spoke, but it's integrated with what we're doing. So. Now we're based in a warehouse in Manchester. We've got our own screen print studio. We've got digital print studio. But what I've had to do, which is a lot of directors don't want to do, is step back now because it's become a lot more self-sustained. I've got a great team. It took me about 10 years to build the skill set up because it's very unique in the way that it operates. And so now, we moved from eBay to Amazon to WooCom to integrate into Google Feeds. And now we're at a point where that's running on autonomy. I can step back and we can use that as an engine when needed to help scale others on Pinterest. And that's the way I'm looking at it. It's kind of like a building block for me. I never thought I'd look at it like that. It's just kind of worked out that way. And I'm a firm believer in timings. And I think that with the skill set of everything that I've spoke about previously now with you, and where I come from that multimedia background, and with the personalized sort of, you know, broad demographics of what we sell to from, and it's mostly ladies category from sort of, baby ladies from the newborn all the way up to ladies wear. So if you think about them demographics and it's clothing, all these things, they're quite affluent on Pinterest. So it's kind of like I've been thrown on a path of innovation, but it's been laid out for me, but I've had to take the reins and think, well, it's obviously there. Why not go with the flow? So I have, and I've ended up here where I am now. And that's kind of it really. So
I love it, Matt. I relate so much. You know, Marknology is a full service agency from creative. I have a creative department to, we actually have a 3PL and warehouse now. So from, really? You know, supply chain to the creative to, you know, being an Amazon advertising agency partner. So we're certified on the ad side too. We're an advertising agency, if you want to see it that way. Like a construction company for digital, you know, whether you want social media, not that we offer all those things like social media and web design, but we can, you know, we specialize in Amazon, but for building my own brands now, it's felt like Marknology while I was building it and learning along with these other brands for the last 10 years, really has set myself up to just like from start to finish, you know, build brands and support them through whatever they need, you know, whatever that thing is, instead of having to outsource this or outsource this, it's like, yeah, we can take care of you. You know, whether I'm doing that for my own or for others, It's just not how I saw it. But what I really, I do see it as a building block. You know, a lot of people are looking to exit their agencies right now and different things going on in the space. And for me, I'm like, I'm just, this is literally like day one. I'm just getting started. Like I just solved one problem. I got more to do. And I think it's cool how you just go with the flow and just, you know, see what opportunities come up. Some of the brands we're working with, I would have never thought, or I thought of myself as a creative at one point, but I was so good at computers and tech that I was like, it'd be stupid to just try to be a musician when I'm really good at tech, you know, for example, you know. Definitely. And so it was like, I feel like e-commerce is how I've blended the two. You know, being a problem solver with creative ways of doing it, but with a technical background. And we've chosen these careers or these, like, you know, these industries where you don't get bored if you're doing
That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. All my internal team, I'll say to them, and I say this a lot, they'll moan, I'll moan, I'll say things like, oh, why am I putting myself through this? You know, the victimized kind of card, and I'm not a victim. Nobody is really when you look back and step back from it. And we all speak to each other. We have meetings pretty much every month, if not every week, if we can, just to thrash things out. We're kind of at all the cards on the table kind of crew. And, you know, they'll turn around and say, well, oh, I can't believe this. You know, I've got to do these extra hours. And I'll say, you don't have to do them. And then they'll go, no, I want to. I want to get this done because it's something different. And I always say to them, if you want to find a 9-to-5, go out there, no problem. But if you want something different and you never want to be bored, trust me, I see myself as a catalyst. And if I can keep that ideology of always pivoting and moving, then I'm a firm believer you attract what you are. And, you know, I've attracted, I think I'll speak for them because they'll probably agree. I've attracted some crazy, amazing people that innovators off the wall, and love to blow things up, and that'll do for me. Because, like you say, it's who I am, and I've accepted that I don't do mainstream boredom. I mean, an exit strategy. I wasn't really sort of kosher with that. I didn't really know what it was until very recently, because all I've ever understood, even when I worked in the industry, was growth strategies, not exits. And if you look at the big hitters, you know, Microsoft, Apple. You look at all these big hitters. They've never had an exit strategy. Amazon's not had an exit strategy. They've had a growth strategy. And so if you look at it from that angle, why is the question? The reason
your
is
game is
because,
small.
Exactly. And they're innovators. They want to do something different. So for me, I'm very much, I don't like to let something go, not at the expense of my own mental and well-being, but I like to make sure that if I can find out and there is a way, I'll try my very best. I'm just a sucker for knowledge, basically.
I love it. Birds of a feather. Okay. Like I like where you're at, because this is more the exception than the rule, you know. And I appreciate that, you know, and it's something I'm navigating myself. That I like the challenge. Like before there was streaming, if I was a kid, I would love streaming and all that stuff today, because I was just a mad gamer. Like I was hacking literally games off of porn sites when I grew up in Africa. That's, people can laugh at that, but like, all right. So what it was like these, I'll explain it in zip files, you know, because zip files, you would go download these images from the back end of these porn sites. Okay. You would change the name, the file name, to .rar, like .zip, you know, with a sequence of like 1 through 200 or something. And you had these 3000 kilobyte image files that when you combine them all together, created a zip. You would unpack that zip and there would be like some exe files in there, executables that might like create an install, right? And in Africa, you know, before 2001, you know, with a satellite, I was like putting these things together and bringing pieces from America over to Africa with me, like playing the games that my friends were also getting, you know, and buying at the time. And I just liked doing it, you know. It was like I just liked solving these puzzles, kind of. And it was like, what I was getting at is like the games for me then translate even to the algorithms we're working on now. And I've gamified them a lot in my mind in regards to like, I'm not a Twitch streamer documenting my gameplay, you know, or whatever, but I won a few Xbox in my day. And, you know, and like even the Amazon algorithm, thinking about it like a scoring system or like a game, you know, when it comes to ROI and business, You know, it's different times, you know, it's different times than in those early days. But for me, it's still very much a competition, you know, that I'm like, oh, this person is using direct mail to make their, like, you know, their business or their Amazon rankings increase, you know, by getting some sales that are coming in through direct searches or, like, you know, whatever the case might be. And it's like, oh, yeah, here's another game piece or another clue, so to speak, on how to execute a holistic e-commerce strategy at a high level. And thinking of it in that way as just like, what's another, you know, tip, a strategy, a game hack, an angle. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You're going back there.
Yeah, it's fun. It's still fun for me 10 years later.
Oh yeah. I mean, I we are same feather and all that kind of stuff. Because when I go back, I actually had a Spectrum Sinclair ZX when I was 2.5. Okay. And then when I was 3 or 4, I had an Atari XE, which is like just before the Atari STs. And then I moved on to, I think it was I think it was an Archimedes, which had BBC computers,
okay,
the big floppy drives. And then, and you might not remember, I'm not sure, but you used to have the tape drive.
My dad had one.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then from there, I moved on to a compact computer. But this is the thing, when I was 11, I went through 9 compact computers because I got viruses on them through trying to do hacks and trying to create things. And, you know, my dad was convinced that it was about a faulty batch, but really, in theory, I remember I pretty much broke all of them. And then I progressively moved on from there, and I've always been interested in gaming, like yourself. I mean, even my degree was part of UI interface, it was kind of part of doing computer game UI interface designing. I've got friends who went on to EA doing other things, animators, digital animators, all that kind of stuff, which was cool. But yeah, maybe I see things as the same way as you, but never realized it until I spoke to you. So, you know, interesting, really. I see that as a strange but relatable outlook, what you've just
said. Well, I think at our age, like in our time with tech and where it's come in our lifetime, you know, regardless, we've been here when it went from that stage of, like, you know, the big floppies, you know, to Doom, that was, you know, how many ever floppy disks, to like Doom. CDs.
Oh, man.
Commander Keen, and, you know, like all these games.
Wow.
Yeah, I got you with that one. I knew.
Yeah, Commander Keen. Wow.
But, you know, it was those puzzles and strategies. And that was before social media. That was before people were limiting their kids with game time. That was before, you know, I grew up in a jungle. I had plenty of time to game and play these hard, these hard strategy games that, like, once you figure them out, like, you know, makes a business problem in e-commerce honestly seem easy in regards to some of these puzzles that these games had in the early days. And you know, I'm not a gamer, I'm not paid to game, you know, but do I bring that, like, experience to what we do today? Very much so. And it's been something that for me is still fun and still the challenge, you know, where's the fun in that, so to speak. I can relate to that a lot. The money is important because it funds everything that we do and it funds the research and, you know, all those kinds of things. But at the end of the day, I never got into this business to exit. I got into this business to solve problems, you know, including my own problems, my own financial problems. I was like side hustling, you know, trying to make an extra dollar for sure.
You made valid points, and it's almost like I always say, well, I spoke to someone recently and I asked them, I said, why was Apple ever a big thing when you already had a sort of, I think it was Acorn. Acorn Computers was around when Apple was. You had all these various fruits and vegetables pop up out of nowhere. And then, you know, they became big. Now, you could argue, why would they become big? Because it's a different operating system. What made them special? The argument is that they innovated. That's the thing. If you're going to do something, I believe in this. I think if you're going to do something exceptional, you need to be different. And I believe there's a quote I saw recently, and I think it's really probably the listeners might step back and really think about this. And I think it's a brilliant quote. If you always do what you always did, you'll always be what you always were. However, if you do things differently, you'll be something else. And I think that's a really good quote, because I think that if you step out of your comfort zone and you want to beat that end game boss and find the strategy that does it, so to speak, in gaming terms, then if you do that, then the money will probably come, because innovation can actually work around anything in my eyes. And I think that if you do find that way, it's not easy, but if you look at it as a challenge, you know, it's, I think the most difficult part comes is like, I've got a family. It's obviously you've got that responsibility of income. And, you know, that's always a problem. But if you can somehow
do both.
Do both and sidetrack that in your mind and focus on what's important, which is the innovation, not just cashing in, then that will come, I believe. I really do believe that. It's easier said than done, I know. When I started off, my parents could have offered me money and I didn't want anything. For 5 years, I literally, my wife, you know, she'll vouch for me on this. I reinvested everything. She was the breadwinner. She was the head of department at a school. I had nothing and she supported me and kind of things have flipped because she's an alternative therapist. So I supported her. We've got an alternative therapy clinic at the back of the house. So I supported her. Cool. We're both now entrepreneurs doing different things. But yeah, definitely. I think the main key with this to get out there is if you've got an idea and you know you're only here once, you might regret it if you've got the capability of doing it. So just have a go because there's a lot of people out there with great ideas. Just confidence and
work ethic and the ability to push past like not getting it done. You know, I was going to make a joke, but tell me I'm not the only one that, you know, we'd have one computer, maybe three buddies around the same computer. One person's playing. The other two are kind of his walkthrough. It was streaming before streaming, right? And we would take turns because the game was so hard that, you know, you needed all three minds kind of like working through the puzzles and the strategy. Yeah. And you might play this level you saved at the save point before the boss. And you might play it 300 times before you executed some sequence of moves or puzzle that eventually got you past the boss. And it's like that resilience, that relentlessness to, you know, it's beatable. It's a game. It's beatable. You've seen people beat it. That relentlessness to push through that and to figure it out, even if it takes 300 times, is something that a lot of the, I don't even want to say it's the younger generation, just people in general miss when it comes to this. And that's the difference. I'm willing to do what they're not, which is to try this 300 times until I get it right, you know, or to figure it out. And that's really the difference. It's not that I'm genius. It's innovation caused by there's a problem here. I'm going to try to fix it. I'm going to try 300 times till I figure out a solution, you know?
Yeah. I mean, my interns have got a really, I think they think I'm crazy because I've got so many statements. I've got sayings up in the warehouse and the unit and all these different statements on the walls because I'm a firm believer in subliminal messages and how it can influence you in certain ways. And, if it's difficult, it's worth doing. And, you know, exactly what you've just said. And I think these things are actually equally as important as running a business because, you know, I know that Virgin, Richard Branson, he employed a company called Fuel. And this is when I actually did work for a few companies in London. I've not gone into that because it's mostly corporate. But this company Fuel would put images of certain things that were strategically put in the building to increase productivity and positivity. And it's a massive business. And it's, you know, at the time, it was such a fad. And if you said that to sort of the generation prior to me, they'd go, what does that even mean? Now it's kind of like more accepted. People accept these things as logic. But, you know, all these different ways of looking at a business, people need to understand they've got to step outside of the zone or the lane and really observe and see, well, is it just about getting something from A to B or is there more than one viable route? And I suppose this is why I'm doing what I'm doing with the whole chat with external traffic, because I'm going outside and looking outside in.
Let's pause right there. Once again, shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. If you're looking to scale your software team, Fullscale.io is a place to start. Amazing company. And without them, you know, this show wouldn't be possible. Back to this conversation here. Let's take a step into you know, as we round out the show in the next 10 or 15 minutes or so, talking about increasing your external traffic. And you know, and on Amazon, this is a conversation we're having all the time. It's what are all the other things you're doing? Okay, well, this isn't working. Well, are we trying anything else? Like, because if we're not, I don't want to just sit here and keep wasting my time talking about the problem. You know, so it's like, what are all the things we're doing? Pinterest. A great off Amazon external traffic. You know, that's where that external traffic is coming from. Let's talk about Pinformative. Like we really just haven't even taken time talking about Pinformative. We've alluded to it. But what are you exactly doing for brands? And, you know, what are you guys researching? What are you developing? What are you guys pushing out? Let's talk about Pinformative.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Well, just to kick it off, I started Pinformative because I could see the potential with Pinterest. And I believe that what we're trying to do is utilize Pinterest and work with, because we are working with them. We've got contacts now in Pinterest, and we're trying to, they are the middle. We see them as the middleman. If you imagine a spider's web, we see them right in the middle of every e-com social media platform. And I think that they've got the potential to funnel traffic, or we've proven they've got the potential to funnel traffic anywhere, because what Pinterest offers that other places don't is freedom of TOS in an ethical way. So you can spin off a lot of velocity of traffic from five angles and pin that onto a board with an affiliated pin that goes straight to your Amazon listing, which could bump it up on the A9 algorithm. Primarily what Pinformative is, I mean, if you had to summarize it, because I know you have to put these things in encapsulated one sentence, we are a PPC based agency that works with e-learning along with Pinterest, and we're developers and engineers and creatives. And that's pretty much it, but we're doing things differently. We're kind of not coming from it from an aesthetic lifestyle angle. We're coming at it as an angle where we're actually built our own internal software called PinNet. And it's not something we spoke about yet. It's still in beta stage, but it's utilizing metadata within video imagery. We've got some cool things on scaling and organic algorithms. There's a lot more science behind it than I can go into, because I'll be here for an hour. But basically, with my background with JavaScript, and you've got Adobe as well with Animate, we can combine all these things and create something more interactive for the user, especially where I think things are going, not only with Pinterest, but metaverse, everything. Mm. It's, you know, I mean, you've got talk of metaverse with Shopify, Facebook. That is a thing. You've got your NFTs, and people don't understand what they are yet. But I can see where all this is potentially going. You know,
yep.
Player One style. I can see it happening.
Because you know what's crazy is that, like, you know, first as kids we're nerds, we're super nerds.
We care
about this stuff. Then all of a sudden we're cool because Hollywood makes nerds cool. And Silicon Valley makes nerds cool and rich, you know, and then business as a whole. So e-commerce is transitioning to e-commerce, which everyone, you know, in a big way, I think even in store is like has elements of e-commerce at this point. It's just commerce now because it's all connected.
Sure.
But then, you know, the next step is then bringing it almost back to video games. So all of business will be, or a lot of money in business comes back to video games and NFTs. And like, think about the early tech adopters. Sure, there's the investors getting involved and things like that, but it's guys like me and you, girls like me and you, you know, playing games, and the world's coming back full circle to there. You know, Sims was a phenomenon where people jumped into living these lives through this digital world for a while, and World of Warcraft. And, you know, we're here at the beginning of these things taking over people's lives. And what's going to come back is it's going to come back to a virtual world where money and dollars and currency is being exchanged at a high level. And it's like, hey, money is going to be actually in the hands of developers like us.
It's exciting.
It's crazy. Like, to me, it's really cool. It's not that hard to imagine as a Star Trek. Like, you know, I grew up watching Star Trek and seeing that stuff. Now we have the iPad and we have this and we have that. It's all like, it was all like kind of created in Star Trek in some ways. And I think of the stuff now, Ready Player One, you know, we're creating that reality.
I was
now.
Just going to say that. Yeah. And there's that film out with Ryan Reynolds. I can't remember what it's called recently. And he's an AI bot. Blue shirt guy. Anyway, it's a similar sort of thing. He puts the shades on, the glasses and everything. You know, you grab some money, you put it in a box. But this is why, you know, I think that all these things are connected. And moving forwards, I've just got this thesis and predicted ideology of where I believe things are going to go. Connected.
Yeah.
And you said it as well, video game. This is another thing, is that people are getting scared of videos, but I believe with content refresh, video algorithms are the future, because it's just because people get scared by the idea of creating this full feature length video. I've done my research with people and they go, a video, oh God, you know, it's too much work in that. That was moving things on your screen where you have to actually do more work than an image. No, because you've got you've obviously got Canva and Tailwind and all these different companies now popping up, especially in affiliation, because we've got them as affiliated partner companies as well. So we understand what's going on and what's fresh. But where they're going, it's kind of like you can automize images on an AI-based software platform now that will create a video, even with an you know, with just an
compilation
AI.
Of images and
yeah. But it's cool. Not the thing is, a lot of people just look at the aesthetics again, where in theory, even if you just move something from A to B, there's still a 25 to 30 frame rate, and with it within each single frame in 1 second is a vast amount of data. So the potential in 1 second, it completely outweighs an image on a video. And I can see where that's going as well. That's why we're trying to utilize, you know, PinNet, and we're trying to, you know, scale things organically.
I'm going to send you this video I did on YouTube where I'm predicting Amazon ahead of time. And now video has taken over. Not that it was genius craziness, but it was talking about, you know, they push it toward hearing impaired and all these different reasonings, you know, for adding captions to your video and being able to watch in the bathroom, on the toilet, you know, with the sound off and watch the video on Facebook, whatever. But really, it's just all these algorithms and marketplaces planning for using video search and being, you know, so that it's being able to search the videos live through the captions, and it'll be search indexed by the captions and the, you know, the alt text and things behind in the videos. Yeah. I just really think that's coming. If it's not here already, but like, you know, that's why they're pushing all these brands to it. And so, you're, you know, if you were a first mover on Amazon when it came to video, you were getting advertising costs at like next to free, for a while before everyone else jumped on the bandwagon. And you know, brands that were innovative and moving were killing it.
It's funny you should say that, because I was in the conference in Amsterdam, the e-com conference, the Orange Click, and they put a competition up there. And we had to join up in tables of five. There was a few hundred people in this room. And we had to come up with the best hack that we could find, clean hack of Amazon. And ironically, we won. Me and these five guys, I'd never even seen three of them again. One was from Switzerland, and we won. And it was all to do with the video algorithm on Amazon US and how to scale quickly up to the top with 20,000-30,000 views using that algorithm. And it's not, when you break these things down, it's not rocket science. It's just like you say. I mean, I've had a discussion. I don't, you know, Danny McMillan is a friend of mine, and we've had discussions. I mean, I've been at the back of the room. He's been at the forefront, obviously, for a while, and I've started speaking to him more and more about what I'm doing. But he's actually pulling me out a little bit, because I'm a bit of a geek with a nightmare agenda.
People don't know how to handle us. I understand.
I'm not great at networking. I'm getting there. It was kind of like, we're actually going to be we're going to be showcasing at Prosper, and it's gone from...
Me too. I'll be there. I'm speaking first time. So this is I'm 2 years into pushing myself out there. So I might be a little ahead of you as far as getting out from behind, but I'm 2 years maybe. Like, it started pandemic, even with this podcast. Last year was a big networking year for me. Even that's, you know, that's how we connected, where I just was like, we're doing cool shit, like on Amazon here in the Midwest, like with my small team. Brilliant. I want to be involved, you know, and more so involved, not because I need business. My business is growing. That was part of the problem. I don't need to come out. I don't need to come out of the dungeon if I'm growing my business and I'm profitable. But there's something about, I like the industry. I like the community. I like, I'm going to get more support and have more help and have more colleagues. And I enjoy that part, the fueling part of talking to like-minded people like myself. And so it's been good.
I'm getting there.
Let me help you. Let me help in what way I can. We're going to get like a beer or something at Prosper. That's cool. So you'll be in Prosper in March.
So yeah, we've got a booth. I've got a little hack I'm bringing with me. Hopefully it's a bit different, because I like to engage people. You know, I want to do something different, not just a banner. I want to do something.
Okay. Well, Keith, I got a tip for you right here, live on the show. In this, it can get a little pricey, I think, like booking stuff through them. I'm not sure. I don't do a booth because I like to be on the move, and I don't have something to sell like that. I'm afraid the customers that come by my booth would be the ones I don't want. But like, it's about couches, okay, or like chairs. So like, the booths that do well at Prosper have like some kind of like chairs or couches or something for people to sit, because we walk. Yeah, at the trade shows.
That's a brilliant tip. We have got circular tables to represent pins.
Okay.
And we've gone for circular because it's more of
a... As long as there's a place to sit.
Yeah. I want to speak to people who want to speak to me and sit down with them and have a chat. And I think that's important. I want a face-to-face discussion rather than just stood there, because I think it's very formal, you're not relaxed. And also, I know what you're saying. I've been to these exhibitions where they have sort of the square, you know, tables at the front. And it's kind of very... borderline, you know. It's kind of like, here's us, here's you. And so we are trying to make it more of a comfortable area to be able to discuss things and see
I just remember I hung out at the Gatita booth the whole time because I was just like, they had couches and snacks. And I was like, the food was eh. So I was like stealing their snacks. And a lot of people would come by. I was like, I got to talk to everybody anyway. I just sat at this couch. So that's a freebie. But no, you know,
that's a great idea. I might get a lot of British snacks sent over there just as a novelty. That's a great idea. You know, what gamer doesn't like to have a Mars bar or a pack of crisps or a can of soda or whatever? Yeah, it's a great idea, actually. Really good idea. Thanks.
So you can do all the marketing stuff. You can do whatever. But at the end of the day, people are like, I'll sit here and talk to you for 20 minutes while you eat your snacks. Easy. You know?
That is a true gamer right there. Somebody who hits the fridge early in the morning and needs to go and get something. Yeah, I know what you mean.
There we go. This has been awesome. And, you know, I know this won't be the last we hear about Pinformative. Like, you know, I think we could keep going and going, but it really is the mindset and finding people that are, you know, as a founder, I tell brands all the time, like, I don't even work with Me Too brands anymore. Like, you know, that was the early days. Like, I'm really just looking for the projects now at this point that fuel me and the projects that are, the key to success across, whether it's Pinformative, my business, whoever's, it's being innovative and like pushing the limit.
Yeah.
You know, even if the thing you've you were talking about the operating systems that came and went, right? But the reason they were successful, the reason why people wanted them was it was innovative. It was new. It was a change,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly. I mean, I remember when they came out with the first iPod and, you know, touchscreen, what's this? I mean, that was like a novelty in itself. And they've always done that. I mean, okay, you know, people do moan sometimes that Apple doesn't have such a feature that it should have, but they've always been different. And that's the whole thing. If you're different, you stand out. And if you can find those niches, those low-hanging fruits, they call them, or gems, you know, I think that's a great area to work in because usually there's less hassle. It's more difficult, but it's worth doing.
So you got to take your own advice. Well, one, that's your sign-off. But two, you got to take your own advice. It says, if you're different, that's how you stand out, right? And so there's your call to networking and your call to come out of the shadows a little bit, you know. You know, we're different, we're innovators, we're trailblazers, you know, creating stuff that people haven't seen, or at least seeing things in a way that people haven't seen them. And that's something I'm learning, just as someone that was, think about it, like grew up in Africa, redheaded, came back here, you know, just where do you fit in? You're weird, you're different, you're a nerd, you know, how, you know, computers aren't cool, girls don't care about that, you know. And now at 35, weird and different, it can result in a lot of money, number one. But also it's the only thing that matters really in the world is being yourself. And you know, our little quirks are something that solve a lot of problems, you know, whatever that looks like. So that's I'm motivating myself, right? Get out there and just be Drew. You know, it's like it's not about being polished at these things. It's about like, look, in the world we're in now as founders, I'm talking to the founders that are listening or anyone that's in there, is like, you can be whatever you want to be in the digital world. Like, you know, you can create whatever you want to create. So, you know, chase that down where's the fun? You know, where's the fun in that exit?
You like that, so, didn't you? You did like that.
Really? I'm going to hold that. I'm going to hold that. I promise you, Matt, like, where's the fun in that? It's a simple answer that says a lot to me.
Another one people say to you, you know, you'll get people who don't have that entrepreneurialism. They'll say, why are you doing that? And my answer is, why not? And they can never answer you, why not? Because if you've got a fundamental idea, or you've got, you know, exactly where you're going, if you've got that focus, and focus is the word, I believe, you've got to have a focus.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the word of the whatever.
Century.
Century. Yeah. And I think if you've got that, then why not? You know, just keep going. So
I think it's been one of my secret weapons has been being in Kansas City, Missouri. I love my city, you know, but we're 2 million in the middle of the country. We're not in LA. We're not in San Francisco. We're not in New York. We're not, you know, Chicago. And it has been that I have way less things trying to take my focus. Not that I can't be, you know, lose focus here, because anybody can in any situation, you know, girls and the bars or money or family or hobbies or, you know, whatever the case, can lose your focus. But it's been a blessing to be in the Midwest where, you know, my focus has been, instead of seeing what everyone else is doing and all the other agency owners and founders are doing, and, you know, these Silicon Valley parties are like, you know, I'm not seeing any of that. And, you know, it's just been like, I'm doing my thing my way. And I built something cool, I think, because of that. And so it's something I see as a strength now, maybe when I didn't, that, you know, I wasn't getting that exposure, you know, like blah, blah, blah. Mm. I also see my friends struggle when they compare themselves too much to other founders or other business owners because they're around all of that distractions, you know?
So yeah, focus. That noise.
I think that's huge. And you know, Gary Vee, I'm a big fan of Gary Vee's too, you know, and that's the currency of the future. Like the magic skill, if you want to have a skill, you're like, okay, what are all the skills I can have? What's, you know, what do I need in 2022 to be successful? It's focus.
I think it's very difficult as well. I know that you probably want to get off now soon, but I think I'd say basically on what you've just said to add to that is that with the world that we live in, especially with social media so rife, and obviously your phone is in front of you, it's so difficult now to focus if you don't have a set routine or, you know,
habits.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, going back years, 20 years, it would be a cigarette packet on a table in front of, you know, a guy sat having his meal because you could smoke inside. Now it's a mobile phone and it's a different type of habit. So focus is, I do feel a bit for Gen Zs and millennials. I think that all these things going on, you know, you've got TikTok, Snapchat, all these things happening and your phone beeping, it can become overwhelming and you'll lose your focus. So I think that if you can have some structure to these things and try and streamline it a bit better, that's the word, then you can get focused. But I do feel for the younger generation with this, because I think that there's so much going on now with tech. It's hard to sort of navigate sometimes.
Yeah, and I honestly give us a little bit of, I say us as in our generation, a little bit more leniency, because we are the first generation. I feel like, you know, as kids or young people to go through all of this change, the social media, e-commerce, you know, all of the inputs. Like, I mean, we are literally can get internationally, you know, advertised to now from all over the world. And there's just so many inputs. And we're the generation having to figure out what that balance looks like, you know, and it's like a little over and then bring it back and then over and then bring it back. And hopefully we can teach a little bit to the younger generation. But I'm proud of us. If I'm a millennial, you know, one of our things is we're doing something that civilization has never had to do. And I think that's, you know, seeing technology advance at a level that's insane compared to the past, you know.
Absolutely. So. That's the word. It is insane. And if you've come, like you say, from the generation we have, I would go out and I would play with my field, play with my friends on a field. And then I'd come back. But we're talking about a generation that started with ones and zeros and the fundamental building blocks of the digital age. And now we're here. I don't think there's as many people that understand that transfer. It's almost like on a refined level of building a structure of a house, people understand there's different brick types, but we were there when the sand was made.
Yeah.
So I get where you're coming from with that. Completely understand.
I love it. Guys, I'm going to have all of Matt Parker's information in the links. You heard he's going to be at Prosper. Shout out. I'm going to be at that booth checking those UK snacks, of course.
I'm going to get some.
I'm speaking on Monday, so I would love to see you there. I'm going to be talking about how to build your brand. So it's going to be a fun, just like 101 convo about really putting together the ideas behind, you know, getting a thought together for a project and putting it together and creating a brand story. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, Matt.
Thank you. You too.
I know it won't be the last time.
Yeah, no, it's been brilliant. Great chat. Thanks, Drew.
Yeah, we'll see you next time, listeners. And shout out again to our sponsor, Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. See ya.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.